This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of opening up the Book of Shmos and learning all about the steps that bring us into Galus, and then ultimately will serve as a basis for the ultimate Geula towards Hashem. We're told that Bnei Yisrael find themselves in the land of Egypt. Bayamos Yosef v'chol echad v'chol ador ahu. The Yosef and all his brothers and the entire generation pass away. And Rashi says that while any member of the Shvatim was alive, there was no Shibud. And the Sforno explains that as long as a member of the previous generation was still alive, the younger generations were able to maintain their spiritual level. Yet, in Parshas Vayechi, Rashi notes that the Shibud had already caused Yaakov Avinu to have a closing of his spiritual experience, and the Shibud had already started while he was still alive. So how are we supposed to make sense out of that contradiction? So Rav Dov Schwartzman Zatzal, the former Shiva of Lakewood East, he distinguished between the two types of Shibud. On the one hand, the eyes and the heart of the people became closed in response to the upcoming enslavement. They had the emotional experience that he calls a timtum halev, a stuffed oppressed heart, with the depression, the hopelessness, that is a symptom of Tumtum HaLev. And the Egyptian mindset took over their lives. They no longer experienced the emotions of hope for the future and the joy of life in the present that had infused them when Yaakov was still alive. When that generation died, then, by definition, the feelings intensified, and that should have required the people to look forward to a future that would exist beyond slavery. But it was that very hope in the future that they could not see. Stage one, the people saw the hopelessness and the depression. Stage two, there was no one left to tell them that there was something beyond, that there was something beyond the grind to look through. And so therefore, the spiritual level also began to sink within the process. Then the Egyptians began to ask questions. Let's out-trick the Jewish people, because if a war comes, they're going to join the enemies and they'll fight with us. Rav Shechter Shlita points out that the Mitzrim accused the Jews of not being loyal, faithful citizens of the country. They challenged our patriotism. And this has been a regular accusation throughout the millennia to promote an anti-Semitic agenda. At times, we're parasites. At times, we control the economy. At times, we're responsible for the poor economy. But in the end, Vayareu Osanu, they made us into evil in any way that they could, because objectively, in the real world, someone who looks at the immigrants who come from Bnei Yisrael, we integrate it into our host countries and work very hard to contribute to the country's welfare more than any other group that exists within the people. So Moshe Rabbeinu finds himself later, as the Jews are enslaved, and he sees an Egyptian whacking one of his brothers, Vayar ki ein ish. He learns left and right, and he sees that there's nobody there. And Rashi explains that he saw in the future there was no one who was going to come out from this Egyptian. But the great Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon Shalita adds that he also saw no one who was prepared to stand up for what was the right thing to do. And in that backdrop, he felt the responsibility to be the person to stand up. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu, notes Rav Rimon, continues this ideal throughout his life. Namely, he remains the ish who rises to the needs of the moment for his family and for his people. It's similar to an idea that we expressed in Shul HaShabbos in the name of Rav Matal Katz Zatzal, that tells a Rosh Hashiva, who points out that ish refers to being a mensch, which is a prerequisite for being a tzaddik or yari shamayim. First, someone has to be the ish. He has to rise to the occasion. And that's something that Moshe always does on behalf of his family, on behalf of his people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he begin to debate. And we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, look, I am telling you, Kizaos Kianochi Shlachticha Botziachas Ami Mitzrayim Tabdunas Elokim Alaharaza. When you leave Egypt, you will serve Hashem on this mountain. Now, what kind of sign is something that would not have happened at the time, that by the time you want to prove it? So the Parashas Drachim of the Mishnah Lamelech explains that Hashem judges us based on what we've done. But he also adds a little extra chesed for what someone else will be able to become in the future. And that's really the message over here as well. Rav Yisrael Reisman Shlita demonstrates this in regard to the selection of Ephraim and Menashe. Why does Ephraim go in front of Menashe? Well, the greatness that's assigned to each one is assigned based on who's going to come from each one. And certainly since Ephraim was going to have a greater person, so then by definition, he comes before Menashe. We're told, Ekia Asher Ekia, Moshe asks, what should I tell them? Who sent me? And so Hashem says, I will be who I will be. What does that name mean to us? Or Shimon Schwab explains that this name of Hashem is based on the relationship and how we see him and how he reflects that back to us. And that's what we say in Tehillim when we say, Havu LaHashem Kavod Ba'oz, that when we demonstrate Kavod Ba'oz to Hashem, he reflects it back to us, Kemayim Hapanim Lapanim, Ekia Asher Ekia, I am that who you choose for me to be. So Moshe turns back and says to God, but Vehein lo yaminu bi, he says at the beginning of Perek Dalet. And Hashem chastises Moshe for this comment, for saying that they will not believe in me. He says his children are ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. But in next week's parasha, we see that Moshe was correct. Velo shamu el Moshe, mikotzer ruach. They couldn't have. Now, could Hashem have been wrong? So Rabbi Yisrael Reis ben Shlita explains that in order for someone to inspire emunah, or someone to inspire bitachon and the like, one needs to speak of it with confidence. And how do you speak of it with confidence? You need to believe in yourself. If you do not, then the people will never be able to hear you. And that was Hashem's retort to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe says, has to be punished, and he's given a bunch of signs. And the first one is the famous one about the staff turning into the snake. Shlach yadcha vechos biznavo, he's told, grab the snake by the tail. Now, it shouldn't have been smarter and safer to grab from behind the snake's head rather than from the tail? If you grab from the tail, the snake could have recoiled and bit Moshe. So Rabbi Per, the Rosh Hashiva and Farakwe Shlita explained that Hashem wanted us to know that Bitachon requires us to listen to Hashem even when the logic seems to dictate a different path. Finally, in the Haftorah, we are going to read from Yishayo HaNavi, Lachim Bezosi Chupar Avon Yaakov, therefore in this way the sins of Yaakov will be atoned. And Rav Shlomo Pines had sound one of the great predecessors of Zionistic approaches to Nach. A student of the Gra explains that in the truth, the punishment of Galus was meant to be more severe. However, if there is a benefit to the world with a lesser sentence, then that is the sentence that should be followed. And here, Hashem sent us into Galus in order to improve the world. And hence, although perhaps a more severe punishment was deserved, Bezos Yichu Paravon Yaakov, it's this Galus opportunity that will be an opportunity to us to atone with the lesser sentence. This too is part of Hashem's chesed. You know, when we're in the midst of being lost around the world, we sometimes have a hard time seeing Hashem's chesed. But if we look for it, not only will we find it here, uvikashta mishamas Hashem elokecha umatzasa, we will seek God from here, and we will find him, be'ezras Hashem, quickly in our days. Shabbat shalom to all.